You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Parrott. Last month, the Federal Trade Commission released a report showing that food prices and profits for big retailers stayed high even after pandemic-era supply chain disruptions were resolved, and that prices were boosted higher than increased costs would have justified in the first place. This came after the FTC sued to block a merger between Kroger and Albertsons, two major grocery chains, saying that the merger would raise food prices and lower wages for grocery workers. Experts have been warning for years that grocery consolidation in the U.S. is having serious consequences for our food system and our pocketbooks. Our next guests have been following the issue closely. They're here to talk about how big grocery chains are continuing to drive up food prices and what comes next. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you have a lot of options for where to shop and get food? Or did some kind of big supermarket chain come into town and drive out the older, smaller grocery stores? Do you own or work at a grocery store? How have things changed at your job since the pandemic? And if you are involved in selling food to distributors and stores, do you find that there aren't a lot of options, not a lot of competition for your product? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ben Murray is a senior researcher at Food and Water Watch. He has a master's degree from UW-Madison. Ben, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
And Eric Schlosser is an investigative journalist and contributor to The Atlantic. He's the author of Fast Food Nation and producer of the new documentary, Food, Inc. 2. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote, Eric, about this in The Atlantic recently. Talk us through. You think the FTC report mentioned what was driving these costs here. You think they could have taken it a step further and looked at the impact of industry consolidation in groceries and in food production and distribution?
I think the Biden administration is doing a good job at reviving the whole notion of antitrust enforcement, which has really been dormant for the last 40 years or so. And what needs to happen now is the public needs to be aware of how concentrated this power is, not only in the food system, but throughout our economy. But when it comes to food, if you've got a concentrated monopolistic system controlling food, it affects workers, producers like the dairy farmers of Wisconsin, but also the land and livestock. So food is the most important industry, and this is a very good place to start.
And Ben, this is an issue you've been following for some time now. This new FTC report looked at these issues, especially through the pandemic. As you look at their findings, what are you thinking about?
Yeah, they really just bring to light the fact that we have a for-profit food system, which isn't a surprise to hear. But after something like the pandemic, you know, we see that in a different light. And the FTC findings really point out practices that large food specifically grocery chains can enforce throughout the supply chain to increase profits and really harm consumers at all points.
And Eric,
one thing I'd like to just throw in to your listeners is when you're looking for a supermarket, you may think there's an enormous amount of competition between all these brands. But one of the reasons the FTC is trying to block the merger between Kroger's and Albertsons is Kroger controls about 25 different grocery store brands, and Albertsons controls almost as many. So you think there are dozens of different stores, but it's really only one or two companies.
And Ben, similar things are true when it comes to stuff we find in the stores, right? Can you talk about what might appear to be a huge amount of choice coming down in many categories to just a couple few companies?
For sure. Yeah, we know companies like General Mills, Nabisco, Nestle, you know, we think similar to what, as Eric mentioned, about your choice with your consumer choice for store. A lot of the choices that we seem to make as we browse the aisle really go into the same companies. And a great example of this is the grain trade. You have four, it's called the ABCD. It's the four largest grain traders account for 90% of the global grain trade, which, you know, when we think about cereals and other types of foods that are really staples, the fact that 90% of the trade is controlled by four companies really shows the lack of choice we have as consumers a lot of the time.
Now, Eric, we produce a bit of food here in Wisconsin in terms of growing, raising it, and our food processing business is really big here. Is this something that's affecting not just consumers, but some of those primary producers, that lack of options of who to sell their stuff to?
Yeah, you know, I looked up some statistics from Wisconsin right before coming on this show. And I knew that the dairy industry was really getting hit. And it's shocking. I mean, I'm a pretty old guy, but I'm not centuries old. And when I was born, there were about 105,000, 110,000 dairy farms in Wisconsin. And now there's, let me just look at this number, there's 5,600. So that means that in my lifetime, Wisconsin has lost about 95% of its dairy farms. And this has huge consequences because we're talking about the survival of rural economies. And when you look at what's happened to the heartland of America, there's been a hollowing out as one town after another loses its population. And the profit is being kept by the middlemen, by the processors, and the people who are being sacrificed are the producers, like dairy farmers or cattle ranchers or hog farmers, but also the workers who work at these processing plants. So, you know, so much of this is hidden from view of consumers in the cities, but the people who live in rural America know this story all too well.
Talking to Eric Schlosser, journalist, author of Fast Food Nation, producer of the brand new documentary Food Inc. 2, and Ben Murray, senior researcher at Food and Water Watch, talking about concentration in the food industry. Whether you're talking about producers, distributors, grocery stores, you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences as a consumer. Do you feel like there are fewer grocery options for you out there? If you are in the food business on the other side of things, what are you seeing? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ben, one story people might think is, okay, a new big grocery store comes into town. They've got an economy of scale. Prices are lower. Too bad. Some of the competition might go out of business. That's capitalism. We're ultimately benefiting with these lower prices. What do you say to that story?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot going on there. And the bigger stores do come in and offer lower prices, but that can have downstream effects in the economy. You know, a lot of rural areas now rely on Walmart for food, and which they have a huge control over, you know, rural access to food. But, you know, they don't pay their workers as well as, you know, because people who make wages are also people who buy stuff. So, you know, if they're not getting paid enough, they're having a hard time to afford the food in the first place. And then once these companies, you know, do consolidate, like the Kroger and Albertsons were trying to do, they can later down the line raise prices once they have a control over the market there.
Yeah, I'd like to just make a comment about prices. Firstly, the cheap price of this industrial food is an illusion. And that was really the whole point of my book, Fast Food Nation, which is almost 25 years ago. There are so many business costs and external costs these companies are imposing on society. I mean, in California, there's been a lot of protests about how fast food workers have gotten a minimum wage increase. And, you know, the industry has been attacking that. But before the minimum wage increase of this year, the typical fast food worker in California was earning $15,000 a year. And about a third of them were on public assistance. And when you have workers who are earning such low wages that are on public assistance, that means taxpayers are paying for the health care and the food stamps of these workers. And we can just go through all the environmental costs that aren't reflected in the price at the market. And then one more thing on my rant, and I will be quiet. You know, when you're going to buy a car, if you have sufficient income, you know, there was a car that's no longer made called the Yugo. It was the cheapest car. It was really not a good car. There was a Ford Pinto. And people who have money will buy a Volvo over a Ford Pinto. And the reason there's such emphasis on the cheapness of our food is that the middle class has been squeezed in this country for about 40 years. And the minimum wage has not been increased at the federal level in 15 years. It's $7.25 an hour. When you look at how affluent people spend their money, they spend a lot of money on food because they know it's good for them. They want to get higher quality food. So we want to increase the wages of ordinary Americans so that they can pay for good food. And that will be so much less expensive to society than having poverty wages and highly processed food that costs so much in healthcare costs later on in life.
Talking to Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, producer of the new documentary Food, Inc. 2, and Ben Murray, senior researcher at Food and Water Watch, with us for a look at how consolidation at many levels of the food industry affects consumers and why it kept prices higher maybe than they needed to be during the pandemic and beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you been affected by high food prices? Have you had to start shopping in a different store, switch brands, switch products, or take something off the shopping list completely? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about a new Federal Trade Commission report on the grocery supply chain, how consolidation in the industry is fueling high prices we're seeing at the checkout. Investigative journalist Eric Schlosser is with us, author of Fast Food Nation, producer of the new documentary Food, Inc. 2, and Ben Murray from Food and Water Watch. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Eric, before we go to our callers, Food, Inc. 2, I've mentioned it is out literally, I believe, today is the release date. You mentioned you've been covering these issues for over a couple decades now. Why now with a new Food, Inc.?
You know, I wrote that book, Fast Food Nation, almost 25 years ago, and I've written articles and I've done some investigative pieces since then, but I really haven't been focusing my energy on food issues. I care about them a great deal. I try to be useful. But what led us, Michael Pollan, myself, and the director, Robbie Kenner, and Melissa Robledo, it was the pandemic. When we saw the news reports about, you know, thousands of hogs being slaughtered and dumped into ditches because the processing system was breaking down, and milk being dumped, and long lines of people waiting at grocery stores for food, the pandemic showed how fragile this industrial system is. And when you have this much concentrated power, one small thing can lead to food shortages. And, you know, we look at it in the film, but I really did a deeper dive for The Atlantic this week on the infant formula shortage. There were problems at one infant formula factory in America, and suddenly one-fifth of the infant formula was taken off the market. And that is the sign of an overly concentrated oligopoly, because you should have dozens of companies making infant formula, not four that control 99% of the market. And, you know, if these formula companies go offline, infants can't eat. It's really as simple as that. So to me, the pandemic, and to Michael Pollan and my other collaborators, the pandemic really showed us how concentrated and fragile the system had become.
Let's go to our callers now. Sarah is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Oh my God. Well, yeah, of course everything is so much more expensive, and I've had to start buying really cheap cheese instead of the more high quality cheese I used to buy. But I wanted to ask, I used to work at Jewel, which is an Albertson store, and they have benefits for their employees. They're unionized, a good wage. And I'm wondering if the merger went through, what would happen to their employees?
Ben, do you have thoughts on it? If that Albertsons merger, which includes Jewel, went through with Kroger, which includes, as Eric said, a lot, the possible impact on employees there?
Yeah, I can't speak specifically to the, I'm not sure exactly, but I know that prior to the merger, Kroger and Albertson have been, there are allegations of the two kind of blackballing employees that were standing up against the potential merger. As far as what the union has done about the merger, I'm not sure. I know that one of the larger grocery store employee unions did not speak out explicitly against the merger, and there has been some backlash about that. But, you know, the consolidation, the merger, if it does go through, would probably put a squeeze on the employees, as a number would probably be let go if the stores were to merge together.
Thanks.
And I'll just throw in, there's no question that there would be grocery stores shut down. Yeah. And one of the answers has to be unionizing Walmart, because the grocery stores that are paying good wages, union wages, provide benefits, have to compete against Walmart, which has been extremely anti-union. So there's just been a lowering of wages and a proportion of the money that people spend going to workers, and that has to change.
Thanks again for that call. And also, go ahead, Ben. Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing to say about, you know, substituting a cheaper cheese or something like that. And what Eric said earlier about the middleman thing, a lot of these shortages are really exacerbated by the financialization of our food system, which, you know, in some instances, for every 1 pound of real wheat that is traded on the market, there's 15 or 20 trades of speculative activity from financial houses that are trying to profit off of basically every type of commodity that we have. And so, like Eric mentioned, like the middlemen, because they're almost countless in this example, are really, you know, trying to make the most of that. And in the pandemic time, we saw a huge spike in speculative trading, and there's loopholes that allow that currently in regulation or lack thereof.
Talking to Ben Murray from Food and Water Watch and Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, producer of the new documentary Food Inc. 2, about consolidation in the food industry at all levels, what it means for people who work in those industries and people who eat food and buy food. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in Platteville. Bob, hi.
How you doing today? And thanks for taking my call. My question is you talk about, the government looking at these monopolies in the food industry. The beef packing industry has been controlled by four companies for years, and there have been people in the industry that are begging the government to look into it, and nothing ever seems to get done.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, go ahead.
That's a great point. I mean, Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle over a century ago about the Beef Trust. This was this enormous corporation that controlled the distribution of beef in the United States. Well, four companies control 85% of the market for beef right now, and that's greater power than over 100 years ago when Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle. But none of this is inevitable, because during the 20th century, thanks to antitrust enforcement, by the 1970s, the top four beef companies controlled about 23-24% of the market. You had a competitive market for beef that really benefited cattle ranchers. And from about 1980 onward, these companies got bigger and bigger and bought up their competitors. And now if you're a rancher and you're trying to bring cattle to market, there may only be one bidder, two bidders, and what that allows is for a greater percentage of the profits to go to these companies. So yes, we've got to break up these big meatpacking companies and restore competitive markets.
I think we've got a caller with an example. Merle is with us in Galena, Illinois. Merle, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, I had the radio off, but I just caught a little bit of that. So my experience has been I have a sheep herd, and I have to drive, in some cases, 2 hours to market them, and there's people in the neighborhood that I could sell them to, you know, by the halves or whatever, but there's no USDA meat packers capable of taking a herd. I'd have to schedule them 8 at a time 2 years ahead of time, which sounds pretty bizarre. I've never done it, but that's the only way I can get a spot where I can get a few head, you know. So I've been taking them to Fenimore, down into Iowa, 2 hours below Iowa City. It's a catastrophe, really.
Merle, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for calling. I don't have a lot of time left. Ben, what Eric was talking about, some possible solutions here. What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, well, and like to what Eric said, like this, a lot of this deregulation is still going on. I mean, in 2018, the Trump administration eliminated GPSA, which is the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration, which is an independent body in the USDA that kind of overlooks a lot of the rights that the Packers and Stockyards Acts enforce, you know, which is protecting producers from kind of exploitative contracts from these big four companies that do the meat. So there is... There's even deregulation that's been going on in the past few years that we can try to undo and help those producers out.
Thanks for that call, Merle. In our last minute or so, Eric, do you see any positive signs of change, of moving in a different direction?
I do. I think the more people are aware of what's going on, the more they get involved in the process, the more they change their purchasing decisions. And I just want to make clear, what we've been talking about has nothing to do with free market capitalism. What's been going on in this country for the last few decades is socialism, corporate socialism, where you have huge financial donations being given by these companies to elected officials that eliminate the freedom, really, of farmers and consumers to operate in a free market.
We'll leave it there. Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Been talking to Ben Murray, senior researcher at Food and Water Watch, and Eric Schlosser, an investigative journalist, author of the book Fast Food Nation. He's a producer of the new documentary released today. It's called Food Inc. 2. Been talking about a new federal report on how major supermarkets benefited from pandemic prices and why we're likely to continue seeing higher prices at the grocery store and maybe difficult working conditions for people in the food industry because of consolidation at pretty much every level of the food industry. If you have a story to share, you can let us know about it. Email ideas at WPR.org. That's ideas at WPR.org. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, a patient who was receiving vital plasma donations tracked the supply to a big business and to the donors, in some cases, some of the most vulnerable people in the United States. Find out what she learned in the new book called Blood Money. And there's a lot of great stuff to do here in Wisconsin. Some famous, sure, but some a lot off the beaten path. We'll get some inspiration and advice with the author of the new book, 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Share your off-the-beaten-path place right now. Email ideas at WPR.org. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time.